Discussions with Ajahn Suchin in Bangkok, September 1993. Recorded and edited by Jonathan and Sarah. Speakers include Jonathan, Sarah, Al, Ivan, and Lynn.
We don't know. Yesterday, we didn't realize this will happen.
Yeah. We're talking about the departure of Khun Suchin's maid and the traffic problems in Bangkok.
So, delay of our arrival.
So you have to have more understanding of anything can happen.
Arising of seeing this moment, of the arising of hearing at this moment, it's more miraculous that it meets so many, many conditionality in just a moment for citta to experience an object and then falls away.
It doesn't take any account of our expectations. What we expect will happen.
Right.
It has no relevance to the way things work.
It's only thinking or planning about having her sister to stay with her here.
Having the story and the dream and... Yes, we forget all the time when we talk about the traffic and our vipaka and how unfair life is. We just forget all about vipaka being a moment of seeing or hearing only. But if we just say, well, just live moment by moment or day by day,
but still
we have to make plans, we have to have expectations.
But right understanding can understand that they are all namas and rupas, because even thinking cannot stay, and now they're seeing again and hearing again. Right understanding has to follow all realities and understand each reality as it is.
If according to probabilities we plan something and it doesn't work out, and conventionally we would say it's really unlucky or unfair.
You can
but
say
really
that, you can think that, but it's not you at all. See, right understanding can understand such a moment which has fallen away, because now they see the next one, the new one again. That's the way not to cling to reality itself by realizing the arising of the new one.
Yes, I find it very helpful if I'm working and I'm so busy and I'm just overwhelmed with thinking and plans, but just to have a moment of awareness of thinking is just thinking and it's not self is such a relief, because otherwise one's so overwhelmed by all the thinking and planning and trying to control.
And that is moment of sati at level of thinking that is conditioned by hearing a lot about the nama and the rupa, but by developing understanding of the actual experiencing, one begins to see that when there is no awareness or when there is awareness, they are different realities.
Not vipaka, because vipaka is only seeing and hearing.
Yes, vipaka I'm talking about seeing, see?
Different visible object only.
But visible object is just visible object, but the thinking is different.
The stories are different. And even if you're in the park, I mean, each moment of seeing is different, it's a different moment, so just the same as
last night.
And this is life, from life to life, it's just this. One is born in order to die, that's all. But before that, there must be moments of experiencing with attachment and aversion and ignorance.
If one thinks one should do more with one's life, it's just thinking too, isn't it?
Developing understanding rather than having just lobha and dosa and lobha. As much as one can.
He's talking
not by forcing, but by understanding that this is the best thing.
They don't like
life.
Corona that much, right? And anyway, last night he was asking me.
It was safe, so wonderful being with you, because you're always calm under all circumstances. And people attribute this to your great wisdom, but as we know, the aim is not to be calm all the time, and also it's partly according to one's accumulations, like as Al was saying, she gets upset easily or something. Well, this is according to her own accumulations, with or without understanding. What would you say about
that? To me, I don't think that I'm calm. I just in myself.
And it's not important.
Because I usually do not investigate myself, how attitude or things like that. I just live. And I don't mind about fame or fortune or anything like that. Maybe that people consider is calm, I don't know. But actually, I don't try to find out how and why and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Because people are different by understanding or by accumulation. So it's not in my head at all to say how and why.
Mm-hmm. So if you see someone else who seems much calmer than before, you don't say, oh, since he's been interested in Dharma, he doesn't
usually,
get upset so easily.
Usually,
you don't think like
I'm
this.
Not interested in such things. Mm-hmm.
Because maybe you think it's useless?
Maybe I lack the interest that most people have.
Mm-hmm. Not the accumulations.
Mm-hmm.
Is that because of your own accumulation not to be interested, or you think it's useless
and,
to think about other people's
accumulations? And also about understanding too, because the more you understand Dharma realities, the more you see that people are just human beings. Not everyone is good in all aspects, mm-hmm. and not everyone is bad in all aspects.
So if someone like Al said, oh, she appreciates being with you because you seem calm all the time, and you say, oh, you don't think like that and you don't think you are, does it just show how little we know about other people from
maybe
outward appearance?
Maybe because when she stayed with me, there is no condition for other feeling like anger or things like that. Because we are talking about Dharma and
yes.
what we are doing for Dharma. I don't think that that's...
But it's not important.
Yeah, but I don't think that that's the question, because it's just people are different.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
But the reason she mentioned it and the reason people mention it is because people find it important or people attach a lot of importance to it. I was just saying, Al, earlier you said, oh, you always appreciate being Kun Su Chin because she's always so calm and she doesn't get ruffled and excited. But she was saying, oh, she doesn't agree.
I don't really know that.
What do you mean you don't really know that?
Because I am like this maybe all the time, or I don't realize that now I'm calm or things like that, or yeah. I don't know how people look at me or think about me or try to find out about me. I just be like the others. Yeah. With metta, for sure, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Maybe that's the quality yeah. that we talk about with you, because you have metta all the time. So you, when like something happened, you don't jump or you don't, you know, like have that aggravation.
React or
react mm-hmm. to, you know.
Because
like
you
that.
See,
you've
when
the
you talk in terms of Japanese or Hong Kong or Thailand, to me it's only human being, and you might come across the person who has such characteristic. Just one or two or 10
mm-hmm.
or 50, what about thousands and millions? And we don't have to name or label Chinese or Thai, because some Thai are very bad and some Chinese are very good and something like that.
That's true.
So just human being and mm-hmm. friend, they're all friends. And since they are our friends, sometimes we understand our friends about the what you call the bad points or the good points,
mm-hmm.
see? But still you can be friend and help them as much as you can. You cannot select only all those good things to be your friend. Otherwise you would like to be friend only to good aspects, good qualities.
But you never have any aggravation sometimes when people might say something that not what you like,
it's
or
useless.
Disagree?
It's useless. Yeah.
Useless.
Uh-huh.
It's useless.
Yeah.
But then so basically you already have your dosa control?
No, I don't think so. I don't think so. I can have dosa when things happen that my maid cannot remember what I taught her, because you'd like to be able to read and write. And I told her many, many times, you better read it every day and things like that. And when she couldn't remember, maybe I'm upset because she couldn't remember just a little and then gone, see? It doesn't matter at all whether I have or whether I don't have.
But anyway, we saw her, I was impressed the first time when we were in a supermarket in Foodland, I think long time ago. And wow. You still, anytime, you're always the same, very tranquil, very calm, and very, all the time. But maybe because also she's an old generation, and older generation, they're very polite. Their behavior is very polite, I find, and very, how to say it, เรียบร้อย
mm.
So anywhere, wherever they are, they're always เรียบร้อย. So that's partly because of that as well, I think, her nature. But, and also, you have this metta. So, it's coming true.
Sometimes, just following on from this point, sometimes when we say, oh, well, this person is very calm all the time, or this person's always agitated, sometimes that reflects our clinging to the idea of self or someone. Because, of course, no one, not Khun Su Chin, not anyone, is calm all the time or has metta all the time, and no one is angry all the time or upset all the time. Different moments, different accumulations. And in the end, it's not a person or a being who is this way or that way. So when we say, oh, this person's this thing and this person's that, it shows our strong clinging to a being or a person at that time. So maybe when you say you don't think so much about, oh, this person's right. accumulation mm-hmm. of being, it's because you understand clearer that it's not a being or someone, it's just a moment of anger or a moment of generosity, and it doesn't matter at all. It just depends on conditions.
And I think there is only doubt and suspect all the time, because as long as there is no understanding of this moment yet, there must be idea of opinion all the time about things and people.
And some being, something in it, sure. I think.
When there is no understanding of reality, it's moment of conventional truth, things and people.
It was interesting, one time Vince made this comment when he was driving me to the airport and we were about to miss the plane, and I was getting agitated when he drove Khun Su Chin to the airport and she remained calm. And at first I felt a bit upset about this. Oh, really, was I so agitated? But then I realized it doesn't matter, because developing understanding doesn't mean you have to not be agitated or you have to be calm. Mm-hmm. It just depends on the conditions and accumulations mm-hmm. at that moment. Mm-hmm. Maybe in another circumstance it would be another way around. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. I mean, if one minds about one's agitation or one minds about one's dosa, again, it just shows one's strong clinging to mm-hmm. self. Just like if one minds about someone else being this way or that way, it shows that one thinks a lot about a someone or a being at that time.
Like for him, he's very agitated with this car. This car got scratched everywhere. And he was just like this. And for me, I didn't feel much anything. I know this thing is gonna, end up getting worse and worse and worse, right? Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, I got...
the one knocked it about.
Wanna start? But I got very agitated by people,
Different conditions, different accumulations. And getting agitated about one's agitation doesn't mm-hmm. help. It's mm-hmm. just mm-hmm. conditioned at that moment. Mm-hmm. Yes, maybe for Khun Su Chin, it's when the maid disappears or doesn't do the job. Just different conditions mm-hmm. at different times. And as you say, people have been brought up differently. So Thais have been brought up not to show their agitation. Mm-hmm. But in the end, it doesn't matter. I think for most people, when they become interested in Buddhism, they think it matters a lot. So for Vince, when he made this comment, it showed that, you have far more understanding of Dharma because you remain calm. So people are very attached to the outer appearance, and they think this is a reflection on the outer understanding.
In Tipitaka, it says that in order to know who is calm when such incident appears or arise in the situation, that one can be very agitated, mm-hmm. but still, who has calm will be still calm.
The calmness is not directly related to understanding in the sense that...
In some way it is, because when there is understanding,
okay,
there can be condition for calmness.
People can appear very calm and not have any understanding or have a lot of wrong view.
Mm-hmm.
And also a lot of what we take for calmness, of course, it's not calmness. So someone may look very calm when they're walking through the tranquil forest or lying on the beach, they are very quiet and they may appear to be very calm, but this has nothing to do with their calmness with understanding. Exactly. Or lobha. We don't know.
Have you talked with Lynn about Buddhism, the teachings?
Like 2 minutes.
2 minutes?
Five minutes.
Come on, Ivan, you can't talk about anything for just 2 minutes.
Exactly.
5 minutes?
Okay, maybe.
This morning we talked about reality, mm-hmm. right?
Just very briefly.
Yeah. But she knows about S4 path, right? You know about S4 path?
A little bit. Except I've read about Buddhism, but just, you know, the things that they have in the West, the books, it just basically describes the skeleton of it. It doesn't go into details or anything. It doesn't go into the Dhamma. It just kind of explains the surface mm-hmm. and the history. It's about all of them.
Were the Thai part of your family interested in Buddhism?
My mom's Buddhist. My dad was Buddhist. But he lost it because he's been in the States for, 20 years now.
Is your father that's Thai?
No, my dad's American, but he lived in Thailand for 12 years.
I see.
So he was pretty, because I know at the house, you know, we always had the Buddhas, and he was, because of being in Thailand so long, but they never taught me anything. I went to private Christian schools, private Lutheran schools.
But then the environment is not Buddhist either. There's no temples,
Yeah, but I don't think that matters.
Did to find out about Buddhism, what area interests you?
Just like I was telling Ivan earlier, from what I read, it's a long time ago, I've been out of college for over a year now, but what I remember is that of all the things that the philosophies that I studied, from the Western philosophies to the Asian philosophies, Buddhism was the only one that wasn't forcing you to conform to society or, you know, like Judaism and Christianity. They're social religions, mm-hmm. like thou shalt not steal. It's like that involves another person. All their rules involve other people. It's how you interact with people in society. Same as like Confucianism, whereas like Buddhism and it was more, you don't concern yourself with other people in Buddhist philosophy, from what I understand. It's more yourself, what you get from yourself. It's like if you're good and you do things the right way, then, and if everybody did that, then everything just works out, it's fine. But if you're not good, then you have conflict with someone else, or you have conflict within yourself. But if you're good, then it just works out, it doesn't matter.
What does it mean to be good?
Because it's different for everybody. I think for me, good means not taking from people when things aren't given, you know, not just being good to people. Kind of like the golden rule, you know, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. To me, that's being good, treating people how you would like them to be treated, and just not doing things that you wouldn't want done to yourself.
So. But isn't that also taught in Christianity or other religions?
It's different. I think it's different. Christianity is a very strange religion. It's, like I said, it's very social. Like you almost can't be Christian if you don't go to church. You know, well, you believe in God, but you don't go to church. How can you believe in God? I mean, that's how, in the States at least, that's how it's understood. You know, everybody goes to church. It's kind of like here, how he was saying that everybody follows the rituals here, Buddhism, but they're into the meditation and everything, but they don't understand the actual, the Dhamma, the teachings. So, and it's different.
When one's talking about morality or way of living, most religions have a lot of common ground, like most religions encourage one not to steal or kill or whatever, but when it comes to the philosophy, Buddhism delves a lot deeper, the understanding's a lot deeper when it comes mm-hmm. to understanding one's mind or oneself, then it's a lot deeper than other religions.
Yeah, I haven't gotten into it so much yet. You know, I haven't really had a chance. Because most of the things that I've studied have been I guess you'd call it secondary literature. It's not just, you know, the teachings of Buddhism. That's it. I've read one thing, but it was a different, it was a Japanese Buddhism. And at the beginning, it was very interesting, and I agreed with their, you know, it sounded, it was right. And then they started going into very strange things, beyond just how you interact with people, but setting rules.
I think it's a noble name, but the difficulty is certainly knowing what is. And secondly, because we'll have severe limitations being our nature that we're born with, that even if we'd like to, we can't stop getting angry at people, or we'll have peculiarities and habits and facets of our character that we'd rather be without, but unfortunately we're stuck with. So the difficulty is how to develop the better side of our life so that that part develops whereas the other doesn't. But first one has to know, what does it mean to lead a good life? Because a lot of people think they're doing that. Most people think they're doing it one way or another. Everyone has different aims, ambitions and goals and targets and idea of what they think is the right way to lead life. But there should be something that is universal, the same for everyone.
I don't know if that's because everybody's so different. You know, it's like Ivan and I were talking earlier about everybody has a different reality, you know, or they interpret their realities differently. You know, like I have one eye, I have one eye when I'm looking at a white wall, it'll see, if I close it, it'll see pink. Mm-hmm. And if I close the other eye, it is more blue.
Mm-hmm.
But when I open my eyes together,
mm-hmm.
it's kind of mixed together. I can't tell, but if I open them separate, you know, for me, that's my reality, is I have one eye that sees pink and then another that sees blue.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, you may look at everything and see everything with a purple, you know, it's different. And I think that also goes to just how you live.
What we can say is that everyone has different tendencies or inclinations,
yeah.
And we all behave in different ways, and you can't tell from outward appearances necessarily what is going on, because as you say, what is good for you outwardly may be different from what is good
mm-hmm.
for me. I may be a very social person, you may be a very quiet person or whatever. So perhaps we can say that what is more important is understanding oneself and understanding one's own inclinations. And I think through that understanding, one has to know more about what are the good or wholesome or skillful moments in our life and what are the unwholesome ones, not from the outward appearance, but from inside. And this is what we're really interested in Buddhism, is understanding ourselves. But usually when we talk about understanding ourselves, like we were saying earlier, we think of, this is me, I'm a this kind of person or that kind of person. But in Buddhism, the essence of Buddhism is that there is no self.
Yeah.
There is no being. What there are moments of generosity, there are moments of stinginess, there are moments of kindness, there are moments of seeing, there are moments of hearing, there are moments of liking, and moments of harmness. So what we're really interested to do is to find out more about these different realities and to learn to understand them better. And by realities in Buddhism are a little bit different from realities that we talk about conventionally, like we might talk about lying down and having a sleep as being a reality, but actually this is just an idea or a story.
Yeah.
Because the actual reality is experiencing harmness, seeing, hearing. These are the realities which can be directly experienced, so it's not something someone else has told us is true, it's something we can prove for ourselves at this moment. Does that make sense to
yeah,
you?
Yeah, but some people don't have a touch of feeling. Some people can't see.
So if they can't see, then it means there's no seeing. If someone's blind, it means there's no seeing or visible objects, or there isn't that reality, but there's hearing, there's sound.
But they have a different reality.
So, as we said before, everyone is different, so the reality is different for everyone. So at this moment, we're all sitting in this room, we're all having a discussion, but the reality is different for each of us.
So and not something different.
Exactly, and not only that, for ourselves, this moment of seeing is different from the moment just gone. This moment of experiencing hardness is different from a moment ago. So the reality only lasts for an instant and then disappears
to
and never returns.
To a different reality.
Totally, another reality.
Yeah.
So when people talk about the impermanence, this is what is meant, because there's always a different reality. There's the death of each reality at each moment. And because our nature is to cling to what is pleasant, we cling to that reality which doesn't last for a moment. And so that is the inherent suffering or unsatisfactoriness of life. We cling to a pleasant sensation and then it's gone, and then we feel unhappy that the next one is not so pleasant.
Everyone experiences the same realities, even though our experience at this moment is different for each of us, but everyone has, unless they're blind, they see and they hear, unless they're deaf, and they think and they feel and they can touch and so forth. So to that extent, the experience in life is common to everyone.
I think it's different because everybody will remember different things.
That's true. And, but
the
so the thinking
same,
is common.
What they leave with, it's different, totally different.
That's right. So everyone sees things differently, but they experience the same realities.
I see what you're saying. They experience the one same thing, but they leave with a different flavor.
Right. And that experience is colored by their previous experiences in life, or the way their faculties operate, like in your case with your seeing. But the seeing is the same, even though if we looked at the same object, we might see it differently. As to color, as to shape, we might see the same object, and it might remind you of one thing and me of something totally different, but the experiencing of that visible object is the same.
Mm-hmm.
And like hearing of sound is the same, but if someone's speaking a language you don't understand, of course then you won't have any meaning in the sound, but the sound is the same, is sound. And if you hear it, you hear it, and that's common. So in that sense, life is the same for everyone, is similar, is the same. And of course, each of us is different because of what we bring to the experience.
So what is our reality?
I haven't already explained this to me. Hardness.
Can we say that anything which is real, it can be directly experienced? For example, what is seen now is visible object, isn't it? Is it real? Yes, so can we say that it's a kind of reality? For sure, because we don't have to create it. We don't have to tell this and that person that this is the object which is seen, because whenever they see it, there must be an object which is seen, right? Seeing sees a reality, which we call or name it, visible object.
What about when you hear things? Because I hear things,
right?
I always hear my name,
so
no one's there.
So is sound real?
It sounds real. But is it? If there's
sound,
no one around.
No, we don't talk about people there. We just talk about reality. And in order to understand what is meant by reality, because some will say that reality is that, and the other will say reality is that. But reality is reality for sure, no matter who understands it or not, right? For example, whisper object is real, no matter who sees it. And sound is real, no matter who hears it, right? So at moment of hearing, there are two different realities. The sound itself is a reality, and the hearing is also real.
Okay, I understand.
So
even if I hear something,
right,
where there's no sound, but I hear something.
Can you hear without sound appearing?
But what I'm saying is that when I was little, I used to always hear my name.
Thinking.
I used to always hear my name.
Yeah. I think that at that moment, since there is no actual sound appearing, so it's only the remembering of sound. So you think of that sound, like you think in your mind, thinking a lot about going here and there, or thinking of different names of friends. Mm-hmm. At that moment, it's only the memory of sound that you are thinking about, not the actual sound at all. So you cannot say that you are hearing, right? At that moment. It's different from this moment of hearing sound, that you don't have to think of anything at all. Sound appears to hearing only, not to seeing, not to thinking. So we can say that sound is a reality and hearing is also another reality. In order to understand what is meant by reality, reality is real and it can be experienced. So one can tell in one's daily life what are realities when there is understanding of reality as just anything which is real. Like visible object is a reality,
mm-hmm.
seeing is another reality, sound is reality, hearing is another reality. What else?
Tasting.
Yes, and taste. And what else?
Touching.
Yes, and what else? At moment of touching, what is experienced?
Hardness.
Yes, hardness is real.
She's good.
And what else?
The temperature, cold.
Yes,
cold,
yes, and what else? This is quite difficult because usually we think we experience hardness, softness, and heat and cold. And what else?
Pain.
Yes. And what else? Many things or just few in a day?
So many.
Yeah,
things.
Many. Mm-hmm. What else? Memory is real, right? Memory.
Memory is a reality?
Yes. Stinginess? Friendliness?
Is it that a reality?
Certainly.
Yes?
Yeah.
Jealousy?
Yeah.
Dislike?
Mm-hmm.
Irritation?
Attachment? Aversion?
Memory, though, is a reality? Even though...
Why not?
But it's not...
if you remember things...
You say that you remember, but actually it's not a reality which remembers. Performs its function of remembering. If that reality does not arise, there cannot be any memory of anything at all. Like seeing, when there is no seeing, there cannot be visible object appearing. You say that there is sound now,
mm-hmm.
which is heard. If there is no hearing, can you say that there is sound now? Mm-hmm. So when you remember something, memory or remembering is real, isn't it? Which is performing the function of remembering. Like seeing...
Remembering is the reality.
Reality.
What you remember isn't necessarily...
Mm-hmm. No.
Just a story.
No.
Or
just...
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. That's
now
why we can find out.
So
yeah.
Thinking is real,
mm-hmm.
but what
you
think about is a story.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, so at this moment, okay, mm-hmm. there's thinking, but, oh, I wonder if I've scratched the car. This is just a story.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, now I understand. Because
mm-hmm.
I didn't understand memory.
Yeah.
So remembering is the reality, but what you remember is just a story.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But even when we talk about memory, it's memory in Buddhism, there's a Pali word, sanya, which is different from our Western idea of memory. Like in Western idea, I think it is just a story, but in Buddhism it's very precise. It arises at every moment, and it's a reality which marks the object. I mean, there couldn't be any recognizing of this as a cushion if there wasn't that marking or remembering. So it's not like a big long story, which is rather the idea we have in Western psychology, so it's a little bit different.
That I understand. understand. You can't know that this is a cushion unless you experienced a cushion before.
Exactly, unless someone has said to you, this is a cushion. Otherwise, it would just be a visible object, which would be meaningless. Mm-hmm. But because we've heard it's a cushion, there is that marking or remembering at that moment.
Makes me think of Aristotle. the plane of reality, Aristotle's plane of reality, where this isn't the real chair is up there, and this is just an imitation of that chair.
Well, we would say, we'd say all the chairs are just stories and ideas,
yeah.
Because it's only hardness at the moment.
Realities. So we come to another point. What is not real?
Ideas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, at this moment, what is not real? Is there any idea now?
What we've just spoken about?
Yes. But now, at this moment, what is not real?
The cushion?
But I can see it.
Can you see the cushion? Can you see
the idea,
visible object, the colour?
I don't know, besides
when that. One knows what is real, idea and concept is not real. For example, thinking about people in this room and things in this room, it's only thinking about visible object which appears now,
mm-hmm.
here. But when you go out, then you think of other things like flowers and trees. At that moment, visible object is real, but thinking is also real. But the idea of something there, the idea is not real. The story of the visible object is not real.
So this chair, this cushion,
mm-hmm.
is not real.
When you think in terms of...
My seeing it, my touching it,
is
my feeling it,
mm-hmm.
is real.
Right.
But it's not real.
The idea of thing,
the idea of it being,
or something there, because in reality, visible object is seen, and hardness can be touched.
Mm-hmm.
So there is no idea about the hardness as something at moment of touching.
Mm-hmm.
But after that, there is thinking about many things. So one can separate the world of absolute realities and the world of conventional realities, or just idea.
By absolute reality, she means seeing or hearing or harness.
Mm-hmm.
Conventional realities are what we take in daily life, like we think that we see a cushion, so that it's conventionally this is right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we don't have to stop saying, oh, I'm speaking to my friends and I'm seeing a cushion, because conventionally it's right. It's a conventional reality. But if we're interested in finding out what is absolutely real, really seeing just sees what it sees, and the cushion is an idea afterwards because we've heard that this is a cushion.
Okay. I think I get it, because the cushion is a concept.
Yeah.
It's only sound that you hear with your ear. The understanding of the meaning of that, and the attributing that to the person who's speaking, is a mental process that follows the impingement of the sound on the ear. And because we're also seeing at the same time, and it's a whole series of experiences that are put together to make up the picture of what is in ordinary terms real at the present moment. But these things, like cushion and person, are not real in the same sense that the sound that we hear is real. That is directly experienced by the ear, whereas the meaning of the word and that sort of thing is derived from that by thinking and considering mental processes.
So then, thought isn't real.
Right.
Ideas aren't real.
No.
Opinions aren't real.
No. Are you looking at the picture of Kunjuna?
Mm-hmm.
Are you looking at the picture of Kunjuna?
Mm-hmm.
No. No? Are you looking at the picture of Buddha there?
No.
No? Not at all?
I am now.
Yes. And look at Jonathan. Are you looking at his picture too?
No.
So you are looking at what?
I'm looking at Jonathan.
Can you tell me what is Jonathan?
He's a man.
Well, we fooled
the
you.
The hair or the shirt or what?
Bright, short.
You take something for her at moment of seeing and then thinking about her. So you take that color for her and that color for Jonathan and that color for the picture and for the color of kettle. But actually, in reality, all things that you are thinking about is only visible object. Exactly the same. If you turn on TV now, you might see that, oh, you see your friend there and model there. But in reality, it's only visible object. Mm-hmm. Like now.
But
no difference.
That is a picture. But Jonathan.
In your idea of your thought, but in reality, visible object.
That sounds like semantics.
I think it's helpful to say that they are different kinds of experiencing, because taking sound, the actual sound that you hear, or if you touch something, or if you eat something, what's actually happening is there's a certain taste appearing. That is a very direct kind of experience. The reality of that tasting of taste, touching of hardness, hearing of sound is at a different level than knowing that the taste belongs to a pomelo fruit or a cup of tea, or that the sound is someone speaking and has
so
a certain
it's like
meaning.
Conventional.
So, yeah.
The first things are the absolute, and contributing
right.
the flavor that I have in my mouth to pomelos is
right.
the conventional.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
So,
yes.
Mm-hmm.
So, the reason why it's not just semantics, the example of a picture, is because if you look at the picture, what is seen is just what is seen, which we can call visible object, and everything else is thinking, or there's a picture of the Buddha or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
In just the same way as when we look at Jonathan, what is seen is just what is seen.
Oh.
So it's like a picture in that sense.
Yes.
It's just something that is seen.
Mm.
And everything else, oh, this
Aye.
Is a man with short hair and glasses,
mm-hmm.
is all thinking and stories. So there's no difference
no.
in that sense. So it's like looking at a picture.
It's an image.
It's just an image, yes.
So this...
This is one image.
That's one image.
This is another
image.
Image. And
that's
then
a,
we look here,
picture,
and image.
This is another
mm-hmm.
image.
But
it's
still
image.
An image, yes.
You picture a person, they're both images.
Mm-hmm.
But because in conventional terms we know a picture is an image, so it's an image of an image sort of thing.
I said, why do you say that this is living one and that is not living one? In your memory, you know, or that you are looking at Jonathan, mm-hmm. a human being, a man, a male, and that is only picture. How can you know that this is a being and that is not? This is a living one and that is not.
That's a painting. It doesn't move, it doesn't...
But at the first moment of seeing, there's no interpretation of anything at all, right?
Well, that
no,
picture...
Even at the first moment of seeing, can you tell instantly what is what in this room?
Between the picture and Jonathan, yes.
Mm-hmm. And anything?
Yes.
Yeah. The first moment of seeing, can you tell suddenly, instantly, the difference?
Most of
or
the time.
Or it takes time.
If I know what it is before.
But it takes
yeah.
time later after seeing.
Mm-hmm.
So one knows that after seeing, there's thinking about the living one or the picture or things. But that is not seeing. Seeing sees visible object only.
Mm-hmm.
And then the idea of someone here or someone there after moments of seeing.
And it appears to be instantaneous recognition.
Certainly, certainly. But when one thinks about seeing, hearing, they are different, right? Seeing is conditioned by the eye sense here,
yes.
far apart from the ear sense. They cannot be the same moment at all because of the different conditions, many spaces in between from eye to ear. How can they arise spontaneously or together at the same time? Because one moment there can be only the experiencing of an object, not two objects, because it's very quick and very short. The moment of seeing, you cannot say that at the same moment there's also hearing, because the moment of seeing is the moment of experiencing visible object, and the moment of hearing is the moment of experiencing sound, and sound is not visible object, and visible object is not sound. So there cannot be the same moment of experiencing sound and visible object together.
What she's saying is that, for example, when we look at the picture of a Buddha or we look at Jonathan, we think that at the moment we look, immediately we're seeing Jonathan and this is a living being. And now we understand, at least in theory from our previous discussion, that actually seeing just sees the image, and then it's the thinking which recognizes this is Jonathan. But still, perhaps we have the idea that we're thinking and seeing at the same time. And maybe we even think we're seeing Jonathan and listening to the discussion at the same time. But this is more thinking. What Khunsu Chin is saying is that at one moment, the seeing sees the image. And at another moment, immediately afterwards, thinking thinks, oh, this is Jonathan, this is a living being. But this is a different moment. This is not, at the moment of seeing, seeing only sees. There's no living being in it at that moment. It's only afterwards, through the thinking, that there is a living being. And then hearing is another moment. So because there's so little understanding or so little awareness, it seems that all these things are going on at the same time. But if we develop more understanding and more awareness, the awareness can be aware of seeing for a moment.
The mind is like anything in life. It's many components making up one process of thinking.
Mm-hmm.
Like if we look at a photograph, you know, if you look through the eyeglass of a photograph, it's actually dots, different colors, which, and then if you don't have that, it looks like a photo of yourself, right? But, and objects, all objects are made up of just other components. A car is not, a car has many components, it's not just, the car's not just there. I mean, you can take it apart into many pieces, and then you've got many pieces, and you can take the carburetor apart into many pieces, and then you can go down to atoms,
yeah.
to atoms, electrons,
protons,
and neutrons,
yeah.
and protons, and all the things like that. So nothing really has a oneness, everything's made up of something else, and the mind is in the same process. The mind is made up of many moments of seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, touching, and colour and aversion. These moments all are individual, they have their own characteristic. The moment of seeing is different to the moment of hearing, which is different to the moment of thinking.
So,
but functioning so fast, like a computer functions,
okay.
so quickly that it gives the impression of this movement and things
yeah,
can
I
happen at the same time.
So what I'm experiencing when I'm speaking... Yeah,
different moments.
When I'm speaking, I'm experiencing my voice, my sound from here. But when I see you, they're all different individual
yeah.
moments that are... that just blend
yeah.
together
mm-hmm.
and make it one moment.
Yeah, right. yeah.
And it's that blending together and seeming to all be happening at the same
mm-hmm.
time that is the reason we are confused and ignorant of the reality. That's why we have the illusion that we see people and we see this person speaking, because all those realities are blended together.
Because there's times in your life where you can be in walking down the streets of Bangkok and you hear nothing.
For a moment.
And all
exactly.
you see, yeah, you hear nothing, but it's
mm-hmm.
you know it's loud, but you just don't hear it because all you see is what's ahead of you.
Exactly. So we think we're hearing a loud noise all the time, but in fact it's just
it's
moments.
Yeah.
Like we think, oh, he's been angry with me for 2 hours, but just moments of anger, maybe moments of kindness, moments of
yeah.
seeing when we're not even thinking about him. So it's just our idea of things lasting, but in fact realities last for a moment only.
So even at moment of thinking that one is seeing in the image,
mm-hmm.
it's not seeing. Because at that moment there is idea of the image. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So you're not actually seeing the image.
Mm-hmm. Faster than that. It's the pure
you're thinking
moment.
Thinking about the image. So what's the reality right. then is the thinking of the image.
Of the visible object, not of the image.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Faster than that.
Yeah.
So one can understand what is meant by the world.
The world?
Mm-hmm. Seeing. Without seeing, there is no world of sight, no world of thinking about high buildings or people and things around you. So there are six worlds in reality. Seeing is one world, hearing is another world. Yeah. Mm-hmm. They are all mixed up and form up the idea of something or somebody. So one lives in one's own world of thought or thinking. Whenever there's the flash of experiencing visible object or a flash of hearing sound, it brings more idea about we are living with many people, but actually it's only a moment of experiencing the absolute reality and the thinking a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah, alone.
That's right. Just we think it. Someone has been mm-hmm. angry with us, but really it's just hearing only his thinking, sound right. and then the thinking
yeah,
about thinking. The sound.
Yeah.
The sound is loud or soft mm-hmm. sound, it doesn't matter, but it's the thinking and the story mm-hmm. that is the problem, not the other person.
Because I know for me, being different, people always ask me, do you like being in Bangkok?
Mm-hmm.
And for me it's no different than being...
Mm-hmm. Being's mm-hmm. the same,
yeah,
thinking
yeah.
is the same, problems within mm-hmm. are the same.
It doesn't matter to me.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same as any other place I've ever been.
Mm-hmm.
I actually tried explaining this to John, and he couldn't understand that.
Mm-hmm.
Like being, because when we were in Kasamet, he was like, oh, this is so beautiful here.
Mm-hmm.
Like, but it doesn't...
Conventionally, he's right, it's
yeah.
very beautiful,
but
absolutely the seeing
yeah.
and the hearing and the liking and the
it
disliking
any,
and the same.
It didn't mean anything more. Even
mm-hmm.
Elle, we were talking about this, you were telling me, oh, you should stay, if you stay in a nice hotel and John comes or whatever, but it doesn't matter. To me, a nice hotel and just any place, it's the same. It's
mm-hmm.
Neither one affects the other to me in my mind.
Mm-hmm.
But to me, they're the same.
Mm-hmm.
It's just one costs 20,000 baht and one costs 200 baht a night. It's all.
Mm-hmm. So one
it's
can.
All the same. It's all from you.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
so one can develop more understanding of the world, of life, of reality. When people just live in the conventional truth, but actually there must be. Reality, the absolute reality is true, otherwise that cannot be the conventional truth at all, right? If there is no absolute truth, we cannot say that, oh, that's pomelo. But there must be reality, and we call or name it something all the time. So when we talk about politics, when we talk about economics, when we talk about anything,
it's not
reality.
Those are all ideas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Those are all
uh-huh.
opinions.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Figures and things.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So in reality, there is no real self at all. There are only different realities arising and falling away instantly, all the time, by conditions. For example, seeing, if there is no eye sense, no visible object contacting, there is no way to have seeing arising, to see. See?
What about creativity?
Give me some example.
Mozart.
That, oh, seeing and hearing.
He heard
yeah.
the music.
There must be six doorways all the time. Thinking about music is thinking. Thinking about history is thinking. Thinking about cooking is thinking.
What about people that don't think about what they do? They, you know, like
there must
Mozart,
be thinking
create,
after seeing all the time.
He just wrote. Supposedly,
if there is no
down,
thinking, he cannot write.
Thinking doesn't have
words.
Thinking doesn't
sure.
have to be in words. You
sure.
know, like as soon as you
yeah.
look, there is thinking immediately.
Yeah.
Somebody, if you can't speak, say you don't know.
There must
how
be
to speak,
thinking.
How can you?
Otherwise, one cannot eat. If there's no thinking about the image of spoon and plate.
I'm thinking about hunger
mm-hmm.
inside. Are you? No, I'm just saying. Talking about this one.
Right.
think about
like
that.
You said earlier, you look at Jonathan and immediately there's an idea of a man with short hair and glasses, and I mean,
that
maybe
make me sound a bit more attractive.
Never be the same woman at all.
I understand.
Mm-hmm. And this is life. That we think that's permanent, but in reality, nothing is permanent.
A little warmth. It's hard to get him just right.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
Like
2 seconds ago,
reduce,
it was quiet,
yeah.
And then it was happy, and now it's quiet again. Mm-hmm. And then those break down to even smaller and smaller.
Until there's none. Because what about previous moment is completely gone. The pleasant feeling just a moment ago that we cling very much to have it again and again, completely gone. And even the next one now is gone. See? We cannot stop the arising and the falling away of realities because realities are realities.
Because of time.
Just develop the understanding of realities as they are, as not self, as no thing, no being, which is permanent, no permanent being. Kind of relief? Not happy.
Something to think about anyway.
So is the person who's... Would I be real then? Does, in order for something to be real, or for there to be a reality, say, for me to touch this, the reality of touching this, am I real? Does there need to be a person perceiving the reality in order for...
No being who is perceiving the reality. It's only a reality which can experience an object you're seeing. We used to take seeing for I see, but
so I'm only as real.
There are different realities.
Okay. I'm only as real as
a moment.
Realities.
Yeah, a moment when reality arises.
Okay.
Only in a moment, real in a moment.
So what is you? What is Lynn?
Momentary reality.
It's like a movie. You get a frame in a movie.
Even worse, that might be a momentary concept.
Yes.
It's not even a momentary reality.
You know, you watch a movie and you see people moving across the screen like you do in everyday life, right? But you know that if you take that film out and just snip out one frame of it, that there's no movement, right? It's just that frame. And that there's nothing, if you've never seen the movie, then you don't know what that story's about. It tells you nothing. It's just maybe a couple of people looking at each other, that's it. And that's the reality of that film at that moment, is there's no story, there's nothing there, just that photograph. Then if you put photograph after photograph and run it together, it gets an idea of movement and story and everything. And in the same way, the moment of say touching, if you could stop it, at the moment there's a moment of touching, at that moment there's no seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, or thinking. There's just that moment of touching.
But it's
and
so
that's
instantaneous.
But that's the world at that moment. That's it, that moment of touching. Then it's followed by the next moment, the next thing, whatever the others follow. Right. But so if you could actually stop it at any one moment, the moment would only be that thing, that moment of touching, or the moment of colour, or the moment of thought. Nothing else. So, but then you put it all together, you get the idea of me here talking in this discussion with other people.
Sure.
Just like in the movie, you get the idea of a movie when there's really only frames.
Frames, yeah.
And that's how everything is in life. That's the interesting thing. It's not like it only works with the mind, but everything is made up of things, other little things, you know. Even the movement of water falling, it's many droplets that make up the idea of a gush of water, or a light. It's flickering so fast that you get the impression that it's constant, but it's not constant. There's waves of light. And everything in life's the same way. Everything's just little things that make up bigger things that give you the impression, like temples, you know. Little bits of glass that give you the impression of it's a beautiful thing. Right?
My description of the Thai temples, they they look great from far away. When you get up close, it's just bits of broken
glass. Just little bits
glass
of broken glass.
But it's true. It's the way everything
in life. They
look
great from far away.
And it's the way the mind works. It's the way the it's very reality, the real realities work.
Okay. This I understand. This, you described it in a very Western way. Like stars. We can see stars, but they don't exist anymore.
Well, you know, if we were trying to explain something about realities that was different to everything else that was around us, if everything else was solids and weren't made of components, then you'd have a hard, you know, it might be hard to imagine that the mind functions that way, and at least that realities arise and fall that way. But everything that we know of in existence that we've ever studied in science or anything is components, including the photograph you look at, which is just dots.
TV screen, when you get close,
they're
it's just blue.
They're just
green,
all
yellow.
Dots, you know. It's the whole concept of dots together.
When you say, well, what is self, what is I, a temporary reality, we could be even more precise. We could say, what is self? We could say, what we take for being self is a moment of seeing for a moment of
the
hearing.
Experiencing
of
reality.
So it's experiencing reality for a moment. Oh, do we? If we like, okay, we can call this moment of seeing self. It's okay, but then what about the moment of hearing? Oh, okay, we can call anything anything. It doesn't matter what name or label, but in reality there's no being or thing or lasting lump or soul. There's just a moment of experiencing followed by another moment of experiencing. That's it.
So the realities are the experience, the senses.
The experiencing and what is experience. So the seeing is the experiencing, and what is experienced is the...
So what is being experienced, I'd say? Neither I nor the pomelo is the reality.
Mm-hmm. So
the seeing of it is the reality.
There's the seeing which is real, and what does seeing see? The image or the visible object, so that is also real, and then the thinking about it is real, but the pomelo and the eye and the plate are
concepts.
Yes.
Okay.
There are two different kinds of realities. One kind can experience an object, the other kind cannot experience anything at all. We can divide realities into two main difference. The one which can experience reality, like seeing, experiences visible object.
One.
Hearing experiences sound, because the dead cannot see, the dead cannot hear. There is no experiencing at all. But the object which is seen, like smell or hardness or visible object, cannot experience anything at all. So what we take for I or myself are the experiencing, the one which in Pali term is nama, and the one that cannot experience anything is rupa. Shorter than English word, nama. The experiencing is nama.
So what we could say in summary is what we take for being self is nama, and rupa is two different kinds of reality, the experiencing and what is experienced.
The reality that cannot experience, like your body from head to toe, is soft or hard only. Softness and hardness cannot experience anything at all. You mean
the body can experience.
The body cannot experience.
I understand.
Yeah. It's hard. So the experiencing of hardness is different from hardness itself.
I can understand. It could be off, chomp it off, and it's gone. And it can't experience it.
The moment of touching, hardness appear. The experiencing experiences hardness. Right? And that is the experiencing, but hardness cannot experience anything at all. It can be experienced, but it cannot experience anything.
Kind of, it it's like the idea of soul.
What is it? A soul?
Soul. Spirit. Soul.
What is like the idea of soul?
The body. Your body isn't what experiencing it.
And the soul?
It's the same spirit soul. Mm.
Usually when people talk about the soul, they have the idea of some lasting essence, though, is that right? Whereas when we're talking about hardness or softness or heat or cold, we're talking about a reality which is experienced for a moment and then gone away completely, never to reappear. So it's not any essence or anything lasting. Not any being. So it's just something which is experienced for a moment.
It rises and falls away.
So it just relates to what we were discussing earlier about experiencing and the hardness. So now Kunsuchin's just explaining that all these different realities we've been talking about can actually be divided into two categories. Those which experience something like seeing or hearing or feeling or thinking, and those which are experienced, such as hardness or coldness or heat. But they're all, what they all have in common is that they all appear only for a moment.
It is somewhat hard to sort of grasp that idea in some ways. I think Ajahn talked about the flame not long ago, which I thought was a good way of looking at jhikas and how they can arise and fall away. Ajahn was talking about the flame, and where does the flame come from? If you light a candle, you know, where does the flame come from? It's not stored anywhere. It's not like it's in the cupboard and you take the flame out and put it here. It's not there at all. And then it just appears. I mean, okay, you might say you strike a match, but the flame wasn't on the match. There was no flame there at all.
Yeah.
And the flame appears, which is, and the flame is different to the wood or the flint that causes the flame. But the flame just appears.
Yeah.
It's there. And you can put it out and it goes. Where does the flame go to when you put it out? But we totally accept that a flame can appear from nowhere, stay, and then disappear. But sometimes we find it hard to accept the idea that there's a citta that just arises and falls away. This moment of reality can actually just arise from nowhere, or seem to arise from nowhere, and just fall away. But there's a lot in life that's like that, that we just take for granted and never think about it. So what really happens is something just arises and falls away, which is what we call citta, or that moment of reality. And it conditions the next one, just as the flame conditions the next. Each moment of the flame is conditioning until it's out.
I can understand about the memory, how it's not stored, because sometimes you just don't remember anything. If it was stored, you could pull out everything. You know? And there's times when you think, or I think, I remember something, and then I realize, that never happened to me. So it's just something else, an idea, or I thought it was a memory.
Mm-hmm. Can the soul see?
No.
Can it hear?
No.
Is it real?
No.
So it's not real?
It can't be real, because it needs to be seen, or touched, or felt, or hardness, or, but it doesn't
is
have
that soul?
It doesn't have any of that.
I just want to know, when people think about soul, what is the definition, or its characteristic, or its function, or its manifestation? Or it's just idea that there is something that we think that it's there, somewhere.
For me, soul is more of like personality.
And what is personality?
The way one acts, the way one interacts with people, acts with people.
Can you say,
whatever.
It's not as precise as this moment which experiences, right? Because when you talk about personality, it's only thinking about personality. While there is seeing now and there is hearing now, and you interpret it as personality, right? Mm-hmm. Because there is thinking about personality, but it's not the actual moment of experiencing sound or understanding the moment of thinking of personality.
Maybe then thinking is the personality, or thinking is the soul.
At moment of thinking of something, that is not a soul for sure, right? It's thinking. So after seeing, there is thinking, there is no soul. At moment of hearing, and then there is thinking about what is heard, there is no soul, because it's only thinking about the story of what is heard. So we cannot find soul at all in the world. There is only idea, concept about something that one cannot say or tell, because if it's true, if it's real, it has its own characteristic, it has its own function. Like seeing, it has its own characteristic which can see, it cannot hear. That is the characteristic of this reality. And since it's real, because there is seeing now, one cannot say that seeing is not real. And seeing is not so. It's just a moment of reality which arises to see visible object. Just only that. And this is moments in life in a day, because there is seeing a lot in a day, arising and falling away without understanding that it's not you, it's not anyone at all. It's only a moment of that reality which can see, which can experience visible object. When we talk about any reality, there must be its characteristic, its function.
So there is no soul, because there's no me.
No reality of soul. No reality of soul.
Okay, mm-hmm. I understand. And not just connected it with what you mm-hmm. said earlier.
And not only the sensory experiences like seeing and hearing, but also, like we said earlier, jealousy is real, kindness is real, generosity is real, memory is real, but it's momentary memory. So what we call personality is really, we were discussing earlier, it's a combination of these different moments of experiencing, so according to different tendencies which are accumulated from moment to moment, we can for convenience say, oh, this set of tendencies is Ivan and this set is Jonathan, but this is just a concept.
Okay. So you're not real, Ivan.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you shouldn't care if it's a... shouldn't be a bummer. Because I'm not real either, yeah. So it doesn't matter that I said that.
Yes. I wish that we could get it together enough to see it really clearly.
But as long as there is no direct experiencing of the arising and falling away of realities, there must be the idea of self, of me, of other people, of permanent being. Because there is no experiencing of the arising and falling away of seeing now and hearing now, see? The next moment succeeds the previous moment very quickly, that one has no understanding about the falling away of the previous one from moment to moment. So there must still be the idea of self until there is moment of directly experiencing the arising and falling away of reality of this moment, which can be direct experience because these moments are real. Anything which is real can be proven about its characteristic, that it arises and falls away too. So there are many levels of understanding, theoretical knowledge, and the development of understanding, and the direct experiencing. without the intellectual understanding, there is no development of higher understanding.
So I think that was related to
the Eightfold Path.
Of words, if you don't know the words, mm-hmm. can you think? I'm thinking of a way,
yeah.
And can you learn?
Rightly or wrongly, it depends.
Mm-hmm.
Because there are many theories about world anyone think about, but realities are realities.
You can't change it.
Mm-hmm. You cannot change it. Nobody can change realities. But there can be more understanding of realities by learning, by reading, by considering, by this discussing or being aware of its nature. For example, when one hears that there are two kinds of realities, the nama can experience an object. Whenever it arises, it has to perform its function of experiencing an object. And the other realities cannot experience. It's hard, it's sweet, it's loud. But those realities cannot experience anything. No matter you live in this world or other world or in the universe, there are only two realities, two categories, nama and rupa. What you call it a fish, nama and rupa as well. Because seeing and hearing is real, no matter what you say, Chinese, Japanese, fish, cat, dog, seeing, it sees, it experiences visible objects. And hearing hears. That's why you cannot take hearing from me or self or permanent being at all. Just a moment which experiences an object common to all. I sense is the special kind of rupa or what you call materiality that can contact with visible object only. So there can be conditions for seeing now, otherwise there cannot be seeing at all. Same as ear sense, it's another kind of rupa, the special one which can contact sound.
People that are blind don't have that.
Mm-hmm.
The one for seeing,
mm-hmm.
people that are
yeah,
deaf don't
yeah.
have the one
because no blind man, there are realities. Seeing when arise when there are conditions for seeing, and hearing arises only when there are conditions for hearing. No blind man, no deaf. We use the term in order to interpret the reality as when there is no seeing, we call blind. When there is no hearing, we call deaf. That's all. You may think that you have your body from head to toe now. You remember that you still have it in memory. But when any part of reality does not appear, do you think that it's your leg? Because in reality, it arises and falls away in split seconds, each atom. But in your mind, you keep thinking that, oh, I have everything. I have teeth, I have blood, I have lung. But these do not appear. So whatever does not appear arises and falls away completely. Only the reality which appears can bring more understanding that it's not self, it's just a reality, it arises, it falls away. Reduce yourself into a moment of experiencing an object. And it's gone completely all the time. So in reality, there's no permanent being. No one, only different realities arising and falling away. When you get angry with someone, you are angry with what? The impermanent reality.
The That I understand.
Mm-hmm. So it's useless to get angry with wind and fire and things like that.
You can say it's useless, but it happens in right, conditions
right.
anyway.
And when the right understanding is not developed enough to the degree that it has eradicated anger, there are conditions for anger to arise. So one cannot say that, oh, I have no anger at all in my life. Oh, I'm so good. Because when there is no understanding, there is wrong idea of self there.
And we can be very attached to being a person with no anger, or we can mind a lot about our anger too. It's more clingy to self.
Did you experience a lot of
anger?
I criticize people a lot and think I must be thinking I'm better than them.
Comparing
mana.
And criticize basically, you know, what they do is not good. So basically what I do is better than them or something like that. But although the fact is that, you know, what people are doing out there or whatever the model's behavior or whatever the people in the office or even the people in this business, you know, like advertising people or magazine people and stuff like that, you know, they do things that are not nice from time to time. So you criticize and end up like adding more and more and more. And lately, I noticed that I really criticize people heavily to the point where I bad mouth. But it's like the more I try to control it and I couldn't.
Impossible.
And it's impossible and it's all getting stronger and stronger because I don't have the end. Yeah. So it's.
Even if there's a lot of understanding, it still is just shows one's own accumulation. So that's why, like at the beginning, you were saying, oh, well, Kunzi Jinzu was so calm and this and that. If one tries to be like that, it's impossible because we all have different accumulations.
Yeah.
So they have they have accumulations to behave in this kind of way, and you have accumulations to not behave in that way, but to criticize them when they behave in that way. So it just shows one's accumulations.
But you used to tell me before that sometimes a good sample you can learn from. Like I admire the way you write, proper the job, you know, the rule, and the way you know, doing greeting people. I find, you know, especially when you do the this to the Buddha image or whatever, and I find it's very, you know, most beautiful with respect the way you do it, and I, you know, so I try to like copy learning from it, right, from you, but really deep inside, you know, sometimes it can happen in a nice way, but a lot of time I couldn't. And then of course, you know, I do understand that she has her accumulation with the understanding and I don't, you know, so but there was one time you told me that I can learn from it, right?
Yes, it can develop.
Mm-hmm. You could say many ties, oh, why very beautifully and do everything very nicely. But what about the understanding? Kunzi Chin also says it's much better to have difficult accumulations but with understanding than to have very nice, very good accumulations but no understanding.
Mm.
Because if you have difficult accumulations but understanding growing, it's more important, otherwise someone can have very nice accumulation, but if there's no understanding,
it looks, can go. Yeah, to other people, it looks a bit conflicting, you know, like me, I'm talking about Buddhism all the time to people if I can, and then I start this Buddhism center and I do many nice things to people. On the other hand, I'm very critical to other people, you know, so there was one night I was telling Nathan about, how I feel about these things, and it's very difficult actually. I find it extremely difficult, and it's bothers me because I don't want to be that way.
Dhamma is there to improve you and make you a better person only.
So it shows that very strong clinging to the self, that one wants to be a certain way and not this way.
Mm-hmm.
So one wants to be like Hunsu Chin, but one isn't.
Yeah.
One would like to have different kinds of accumulations,
mm-hmm.
but one hasn't.
Yeah.
It shows very strong strong clinging to the
mm-hmm.
self, I think. Would you say that, Hunsu Chin?
Yes.
It shows lopa, but also that the idea of tama is not to necessarily
change
you to be a better person.
But
it's
to accept.
To show what the realities are, and the realities are lopa and dosa,
mm-hmm.
and you can't escape them just by wanting to escape them. They're there and be there.
I think also if one wants to change one's own accumulations very much, one also wants to, because of one's strong attachment to self, one also wants to change others' accumulations very much, and that's why one will criticize a lot. So if one learns to accept others and accept oneself, accept that they are just accumulations, it makes life much easier. And I understand what you're saying, because I often have similar difficulties or find I'm being critical, but the problem is one's strong clinging to a self or a being. One thinks of that person as being someone. One forgets it's just accumulations at that moment, as for oneself.
It's part of the wanting to escape from the dosa anyway. Actually, criticizing...
Dosa tries to find an object. If it's not that object, it'll be another one.
Well, lopa makes you critical of other people, and then that criticism is dosa, so it's unpleasant. And after a while, it builds up to being feeling very unpleasant to do it. And so then you don't like it. So you want to escape from having this dosa.
Mm.
So it's just another clinging or another attachment to escape it. And we do it all the time. And I think that we have to try and just understand that's not what Dhamma's about. It's not to change your
not
life.
Not to change, but to accept.
It's to understand to actually know when the dosa arises,
mm-hmm.
that it's dosa, that the lopa arises lopa. I mean, okay, contemplation of it may help in certain ways, but it's still going to arise in some form. If it doesn't arise in criticizing your people, it arises in some other form. Like, who dented my car?
Just leave the car out of it.
I don't think it's wrong to develop the way you like to be. It's not wrong at all.
It's good to learn to be oneself,
mm-hmm.
I think.
And develop the way you want to be, yeah.
Yeah, I'm trying quite hard. Not hard, but very strange just lately. You know, it become that way, maybe because I got too much on and when things doesn't go my way too much and they, off track. So I felt like it's too much for me to take. And especially when I'm around with people also criticize a lot, couple of people that I've been around that really heavily criticism, like everything is wrong, and so I tend to go towards them. But sometimes I do, have sati arise and I feel, this is not right. Just deep inside telling me that it's not, it's not the right way. And there's one other thing I want to ask you about. There was some saying about you cannot make yourself, you cannot compare with the other people, you are better or worse. Something like that. Can you explain? It's not good when you said you're worse than them or you're better than them.
Or the same
as them.
The Buddha said that better, worse, all the same.
All
because
kinds
there's
of
no
mana.
Self to compare. It's all mana.
When it arises, there can be understanding of that moment as not self, just a reality. That's the best thing. Because only an arahata can eradicate mana.
That made me feel better.
But
long way to go.
But there's more than a long way to go. You can't, even the sotapanna has lopa and dosa. They criticize, they do. So it's not the idea to reduce it.
Creative one?
Pardon?
Creative one. The criticism. Makes it like that because that is moment of understanding or kindness or friendly.
But
yeah.
I think people out there don't understand that. They what especially the Thais, they think everything is criticism.
Depends
they're
on the
cheater.
Yeah, but that's not what's making you unhappy. What's making you unhappy is the fact that you've got so much dosa going on.
Oh, yes.
And you don't like the dosa, that's all. So
sometimes,
you want to change.
Sometimes, like we were talking about earlier, about being lost in the world of concepts, sometimes, one's so lost in the world of concepts, one really thinks that the problems in one's life are the models and the people around and the traffic and the this and the that. And we just forget that the problems are the lobha and the dosa. Lobha is clinging or attachment, dosa is aversion from every little annoyance up to strong anger. So we're just so lost in our stories.
But these are the realities that have to be known, right? The dosa is the reality that has to be known.
So it doesn't
mean... It's not to escape it. Dhamma's not there to make it disappear. Dhamma is there to recognize it, to understand it better. Just like understand...
accept it.
Attachment or understand touching or smelling or whatever other reality arises.
That's true.
I think in Dhamma or in our life... we forget that that's what is there to be understood, and we're trying to always escape and change it.
That's right. Like earlier at the beginning, when Al said all constituents were so calm, and constituents said, I don't mind whether I am or not, or whether I get angry or don't. I don't think about it. It's just the way it is at that moment. Sometimes, because of our strong clinging to ourself, we mind so much, so there's some dosa. But then if we mind about it, and don't want to have it. Mm. It's a whole lot more dosa. So if we mind about being the person who gets impatient, or it just shows more, it's just more clinging and more dosa. Better just accept it and let it go. And
so old ignorance just blocking in there. Keeping us on
it's
the track.
It's nice to see ignorance, because some people do not know where it comes or when it's there. We just say ignorance, ignorance, but where is it? See, at moment when there is no awareness, no understanding, it's there. And when there is lobha or dosa, it's there too.
How can we forget a lot?
Well, because that's the nature of the...
accumulation.
Accumulations of God, the ignorance of God.
Maybe not enough.
We often try to solve our problems through... concepts rather than understand the reality.
That moment.
Trying to control the conditions around rather than understand the realities. Trying to change people, trying to control the situation.
But even that's the nature also, that is the nature of the way the citta is conditioned to try and control.
That's right, the lobha, the wanting it.
It's another reality that's arising that needs to be understood.
Mm. It's being positive. Being positive and being, like, not criticize other people is partly made down.
It depends on citta at that moment. But I think that when we are true friend, we understand our friend and we see weak point or bad point or good point of our friend, we have understanding. So it helps us to have more metta when there is understanding. But when there is dosa, you do not understand your friend or what you take for friend that you are having metta towards. Like when we talk about metta, it means to be friend. And friend has such a great meaning, because you don't have the bad thought about friends, right? You think of helping or in good way.
Admonishing can also be...
Pardon?
Admonishing can also be a friendly act.
Right, because
But it depends,
It depends on the motive.
What do you mean in Thai? It's meaning what?
Admonish, to correct someone or to point out a mistake or
to
criticize, you could say. Like,
like you admonish your child.
Because, you know, for their own safety, you have to warn them away from hot things or whatever, whatever. But it's easy to say, well, you know, constructive criticism is okay, but in fact, it's normally motivated by our dosa anyway. Either attachment, if it's someone close to us, or dosa, if it's someone we are not particularly attached to. So it's better to really to understand the moment than to worry about whether our criticism is wholesome or unwholesome?
Sometimes it's also motivated by our strong expectations. Sometimes perhaps we do a lot for other people, like you're the kind of person who helps other people a lot or does a lot, but then this is wholesome, but then maybe we have expectations. We think that someone else will, you help the model, but maybe you think the model will therefore behave in this way or that way. Well, the helping is kusala, of course, but the expectation is akusala, and then if the person doesn't behave in the way you expect, you feel unhappy or you feel critical, but the problem really is your expectation. They're just the way they are. They can't be any other way at that time. But when we expect them to behave in the way we would behave in that situation, it's very unhelpful because they can't behave in the way we would behave because it's different accumulations at that time.
I find sometimes, like I've got many people who've got problems between the relationship, like boyfriend and girlfriend, or husband and wife, or, you know, a lot of people like that call me here and consult with me about, you know, life, about how to, you know, start. We spend hours, and that moment, I don't mind spending like hours or 2 hours talking on the phone and helping them out, like totally be friend and easy, no problem, you know. But there's another group of people, like in the business, you know, sometimes I find it very, very hard to be totally, like, you know, into not helping, like talking and discussion and advice and stuff like that. Why is that?
Because you don't consider them as your friend.
But those people are not my friend. The people
who call everyone
me.
Is your friend.
Okay.
It's much better to think of everyone as your friend.
That needs to be developed.
That doesn't mean that you should
talk to everyone who
for hours and try and solve all their personal relationships.
Friend means goodwill, having goodwill.
That's right.
Having goodwill, but it doesn't mean that you either talk or don't talk. It may mean that you're busy or you need to give time to your children. So you can be friendly, but it depends on
the
circumstances.
But we can't be equally friendly to everyone. Because we are attached to some people, not to others. So obviously, we are going to spend more time helping those who are friendly.
Those people are not my friend at all, actually. They're just someone that I know, and they just call me at home. And so, you know, I got this problem, can you help, talk, you know, just like basically talk, listen to their problem, and then anything in my knowledge that I know about them or something that I feel good about to share with them, and that's, you know, but I don't know them at all, I hardly know them, these people that call me.
In order to understand the characteristic of metta, a loving kindness, it means that you are friend to everyone.
Equally.
Yes, no matter you know them or you haven't seen them before.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, I would like to, like, you know, like, yeah, I like to think like that, you know, I have everybody equal, especially like my client or my model who are, they're the one who bring me the money, bring me the income, you know, I should be more even considerate. In the past, I think I have, but not to the point where, like, you know, like these people calling me and consulting about, you know, asking for advice about, you know, what they're going to do, and some of them like want to kill themselves and then talk to me about that. And there's time when I really, like, I want to really in a way go out there and just feel that way with this, my model or my, you know, client, my customer, because they're the one who's bringing me the income, and I have to talk with them all the time, every day, you know. But then, of course, another factor is that because, you know, you work with people, so a customer would want very heavily this way, and then the models also want very heavily this way, and you can't match them together, you're in the middle, you know, so it's also very difficult.
Be friend to everyone, to all, that's the way.
Business part.
even so.
But I think what Khunsu Chin means by being friendly is different from what you mean. For example, last time or one time we were here, she talked about you can have metta to the man in the street. Now, because she is a Thai lady, she may not even look at him or smile at him because it's not appropriate.
Yes.
If it's a woman, maybe she will smile. If it's a man, she might not even smile. But you can still have metta because it's the citta. Maybe that man will ring her up at home and invite her on a date. Well, she can have metta and just say, just put the phone down without saying anything. So it's not a matter of what you do, it's a matter of the citta. So with your models or your clients, because you're running a business, from a business point of view, you might feel, oh, it's better not to get too involved with their personal problems, otherwise it'll be difficult to run the business. And also, if you get involved with everyone's personal problems, you have no time for your family, but that doesn't mean you can't have metta. You can have metta, but say, oh, I'm very sorry, I think it would be better if you contacted the something agency, or I think you definitely need help, why don't you do this, but I'm afraid this is not my area. Having metta or being friendly doesn't mean you have to talk for 3 hours. It depends on the... Well, it doesn't mean you do or you don't, because it's the citta, not what happens, that's important. You don't talk to everyone you meet in the street, but you can have metta to everyone you walk. You can be friendly to everyone you meet.
Yesterday, when I heard the story about one customer was trying to convince my mother, which is her, to work directly with them without going through the agency. At the beginning, I met everybody in the office is getting really annoying, angry, and, you know, just think, how come the client is so bad? And that moment when I hear about this whole story, you know, I got really, you know, very angry, and I got into the phone, and I was going to say something like, you know, nasty and da 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 da. But the moment I picked up on the phone, I said, maybe I should change the way of talking to them instead of just, you know, let my anger out. Maybe it's not the good way. But at that moment, I wasn't thinking about having metta at that moment. But like I was trying to, like, if anywhere I can say to her, make her feel a little bit comfortable, not agitating or not, you know, totally angry or, you know, whatever, that will cause a problem later on. So the way I talked to her, it's actually quite polite, and I'm you know, I was surprised that I can say things like that. Once I could never say that. I would just say, you know, don't do that again, you know. But I said, I'm quite willing to go there and explain to your boss so that he understands the whole situation. I said, Avon has been a good company to us for so many years, and I want to help them. But unfortunately, the people who work, they got the budget, you know, from the big boss, that only this much, and it's been like that for ages. So, you know, I said, I don't mind go there and educate them and talk in that way. And she was happy, in a sense, you know. I said, you know, you've made an appointment, I can go there and talk to your boss so that you, it won't make it difficult for you to work with us, you know, because now Avon is like dropping because they always pay that much money, where other small company, you know, the new company they built up, and they listen to us.
Can't be meta all the time.
No, but you know, like when you're thinking about how to say it to people.
There's not meta there?
It's not.
Nobody can tell except yourself.
But it's happening so fast.
Maybe a moment, a moment of consideration, different moments.
I will not angry. I will not angry. But
and you don't want that person to get angry either.
Yeah, I don't want her to get upset, and I think we can be sensibly talk, and you know, I can help her, educate her, and because she doesn't know anything about this business, obviously, because you know she think that by contacting my model directly and working with them, they can save the company's money, so they can get the, you know, whatever.
I mean, one could, in that situation, because I have exactly the same sort of circumstance with my business, one can refrain from showing one's... Actually, one is annoyed, but one can refrain from showing it and can speak quietly and calmly and say, I'm sorry, this is the way we do business.
When you have that moment of really, truly met, it's an incredible feeling, I think. It's like you don't expect anything in return from that person.
So
you just want them to be happy. And when you see them happy, you're totally happy, you know.
And if
that
they
doesn't happen that often.
I think metta is a lot more ordinary. It doesn't have to be that strong feeling.
Mm-hmm.
Just even doing something without thinking
mm-hmm.
can often be motivated by metta.
But if you don't understand it, then it cannot be metta.
Yes, thank you. By accumulation.
It doesn't have to be so different
from otherwise you can't.
Other moment.
Yeah.
People who have never heard of the Dharma, even Christians, can have many moments of metta just naturally by their tendency. But the advantage of understanding more about it is if one doesn't know anything about it, one may not see the advantage of it, or someone might say, oh, it's silly to be friendly to everyone you pass in the street, so it may stop or change, but by understanding the value, one can see how useful it is to develop.
Metta to strangers, that's what I say.
Also, we must remember that being friendly doesn't mean, as we would say conventionally, opening up totally to everyone.
Yeah.
In the business world, sometimes you have to be careful about what you do or say to other people who might be competitors. But it doesn't mean there's no metta, because you don't give all your trade secrets away or whatever.
Yeah, those that doesn't do you any good and make you look very ugly, actually.
Mm, thank
you. In your thinking, your behaviour, and your speaking, and, you know, everything.
I do think, though, Kunsu Chin, maybe it's the same for Ao. When I used to travel around and didn't have a responsible job and wasn't running a business, it was a lot easier to be quiet and not to be so agitated. Yeah. But when you are very busy, especially when you're running a business and you have a lot of responsibilities, for me as well, it seems to be a condition for more dosa, or because things seem more important and there seems to be more at stake. It's much easier when you're lying on the beach in Samui or sitting around having Dharma's discussion to be very quiet and to whine nicely, and it does depend on conditions as well, I think.
Well, often that's what we try to do in certain circumstances. We think if we can escape to a certain place, we can function better, we can be better people.
Don't make any excuse. No excuse.
No excuse.
I think that right understanding can develop at any situation.
Mm. Any time. Otherwise, yeah. One's limiting it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because, in a sense, it's all related to Gamma and Vipaka, isn't it? If a person suffers discomfort, and that is an aspect of Vipaka. So in a sense, it shouldn't matter whether one looks here in Bangkok or Hong Kong for a doctor.
Yes, why not? Because we have to treat, to have a treat too. Treatment.
But treatment...
It doesn't mean that when you are sick, you don't have to do anything, just sit and die.
No. But if you look in one place and you don't get the right treatment...
If you can, your vipaka is good enough, you can go anywhere.
I see, yeah. So you meet someone who will recommend the treatment in another place. Well, how come she hasn't asked us before? We haven't discussed the problem before.
No right conditions yet.
Mm-hmm. So could you say we're trying to influence the vipaka?
No, not at all. Nobody can do anything when there is awareness of this very moment. It has arisen. So you realize that nobody can do anything at all.
But one can
they
create
can be
conditions
thinking.
For
they can
future
be thinking.
Arising.
They can be thinking, and still it depends on conditions for vipaka to arise. You can think a lot about doctor in Hong Kong, but who knows whether he dies today or we don't know. Mm-hmm.
But you could say that you can't do anything because of the vipaka will be the vipaka as it is at this moment, but you could say, well, you know, if one tries to find the right cure, it seems like something is being done to help it.
No, because it is not yet reduced to a moment of thinking. Mm-hmm. So you know that even such moment is only
it's still
a reality.
Conceptual ideas.
Yeah.
We were talking yesterday with Kunsu Chit at lunchtime about, in Western terms, we would say some people have a martyr tendency. It means that they put themselves out a lot to help other people, but sometimes they put themselves out too much, even if it means perhaps they are sick and it's better if they rest, maybe because they think a lot about other people, so still they will try to help. Maybe it's kusala, but sometimes it's not practical, because sometimes, you know, it's more sensible to stay quietly at home and look after your health. But on the other hand, it's kusala to want to do things to help other people.
We don't know really what this moment is. That's why there can be understanding with awareness of this very moment, of just assuming that it is kusala or akusala. It can be that or it can be that.
But some people might say, even if you're sick, it's better to help the other person if it's kusala at that moment. But on the other hand, if you take care of yourself, then perhaps there isn't any kusala.
These are moments of thinking, so we don't know yet what would arise at that very moment. So just forget about previous moment and understand it, try to develop the understanding of this very moment and understand that all these are thinking.
Just stories.
Yeah, yes. Stories, yeah. Otherwise, one forgets this moment.
Like sometimes people, this came out in one of our discussions in Hong Kong, sometimes people think, well,
if it's good to give, if you are the real generous person, you will give everything away, all your money and all your home. But I think, again, it's just...
Impossible, impossible. Why? Because there is lopa, which is not yet eradicated.
So you mean even if everything is given away, it doesn't mean...
One still has lopa attached to the five khandhas. There is still self.
But even a person who has no more lopa would still not give everything away, would they?
You mean an arahata who does not have lopa?
Right.
And
he still keeps his robes and
he cannot give it away because he has to use it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So it would be not sensible to give everything away.
It's so ridiculous to think like that.
Mm-hmm. The more attachment we still have, the more we need. Still.
By developing understanding of this very moment, one learns to understand reality that it depends on conditions which one will arise.
I think it's because people, maybe it's an idea of forcing kusala, like they think, well, generosity is good, so the way to develop is to have more generosity. So in theory, it sounds like the more you give away, the more generosity there will be.
No, not necessary, because one can give just by other motives, like wanting to be known that one is the giver.
Mm-hmm.
Or one give just want the one who is given to respect or to do anything like...
So it just always depends on the
jhita.
On that theme, one of our friends in Hong Kong, what she thinks is very ridiculous is what she heard about in Thailand and China, and that is people buying birds and letting them free. And some Westerners find this very distressing. Yes. They find it so ridiculous.
Yeah.
They find it very strange.
Usually I do not do that because I think that, oh, as long as I cannot stop people to...
let them free.
Yes. Sometimes I
will
do that because of the sake of the children who want to sell. See, for that sake, because it's all right, because for the children and for the bird, okay. But I don't have a tendency to go and try to buy lots of fish or lots of turtles or to free.
Yes. Because I mean, Westerners think, well, you know, this is so ridiculous because by doing this, by paying to let them free, all you do is encourage them to go and catch
someone
them.
To catch them in the first place. So
that is long.
Westerners
that is long, long story about that. But at the moment of seeing children, needy ones, see?
Just the moment.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's just unfortunate because often if people see or a program on a documentary about Buddhism or something in Thailand, often they will show something like this. And so then people
on
say,
TV,
well, how
in
come,
Singapore,
how
in
come
Hong
you think
Kong,
Buddhism so good when they do these ridiculous things?
Right.
So people get quite the wrong idea.
There are many other good things to tell them about Buddhism.
What's your opinion? Do you think it's a good thing to...
Probably not.
I think it's ridiculous.
But we need to find some animal that just to come for the people to kill, and just as we call it, the armadillo or something like that. ที่จิตปล่อยไอ้ตัวอีแลนตัวแลนตัวเชื่อ I found it in the market.
I see.
Mm-hmm.
And you just bought it. It was there for selling to eat. But you bought it and let it go.
She has accumulation for compassion.
Yes.
We walk on one restaurant on the seaside, and I didn't see anything, but she saw the crab's eyes looking at her. Things like that. And she couldn't go away. Yeah. But how can she see the crab's eyes, see, looking at her like asking for mercy, things like that. Yeah. For compassion, she's very quick. Do you have any question in Hong Kong when you teach Abhidhamma?
In my Abhidhamma class, then it is just
the one student of me and no problems, and all his questions are about realities. And sometimes he may ask some question like how many planes of existence, and I don't know, and I check it up. Sometimes a technical point, but not important. But when it's about realities, of course, it's no problem for me to help. So this is no problem. When we have the Sunday discussion, because there are more people, then there are other questions that come up. And one question which comes up a lot, especially from his other Chinese teacher that I mentioned to you, is about this idea that we discussed a little bit yesterday, that there should be, the aim is to be calm and calm in one's work, and so one should follow a practice that helps one in one's work. And my student thinks he's made a lot of progress from the practice because now he doesn't get so angry or upset. And what he says to me about the Abhidharma classes, he says, well, it's all very well, but my other teacher has taught me this practice and I can see the benefit because I'm so calm in my work and I do my work better. But from the discussion of realities or our idea of the practice, there's nothing to do and no obvious benefit. So it's interesting and it makes a lot of sense, but it doesn't have the same benefit as the other practice. So this is a little bit difficult to answer sometimes.
It depends on the listener's foundation of the understanding of realities. Otherwise, there's no point to develop what the kids say, practice.